Well, amazing what you miss when you're not here. Someone just delivered to me the best, the absolute best piece of equipment for dealing with the media as I watch television that I have ever seen. It's kept me from breaking in tens of thousands of dollars of television equipment. It's a little box that just works just like a TV channel changer. But I dare not punch it on live TV. But it's not named properly. If I had invented this, I would have named it, "You took the words right out of my mouth." Well, I have a few words to say about the spoiled brat media again tonight. Oh, how they have squealed and complained and mutually felt sorry for one another, tried to find a congressman that would agree with them, and peddled that media-created right that is not in the Constitution at all. And the public's right to know. How many of you remember when another First Amendment right was being destroyed by the media on the grounds that churches could have no sacred sanctuary secret rites, but somehow or other churches owed to the public the right to know everything about them inside and out? And I sat here and screamed that there are certain rights that are inalienable, including the right to worship God, which, in spite of the ignorance of the media, God's word refers to the giving of money as worship, because the word means worth-ship. It refers to the giving of money in worship to the work of the Lord and to God as liturgy and as Eucharist. Not even the Mass is referred to as Eucharist. And that Eucharist, that Mass, that worship in Matthew 6 is ordered to be done in secret. But the media sold a bill of goods that churches somehow owed the public, a reciprocal quid pro quo, for its tax exemption. Tax deductions are a privilege. You might owe something for that. That's why we don't allow our people to take it. Tax exemption is a right. A right protected by the Constitution, constitutionalized further by the Supreme Court, confirmation of that right many, many times over, including in meeting the challenge to those that said there was some kind of violation of the Establishment Clause and the indirect subsidy of not charging taxes. The Supreme Court balanced the constitutional issues and said the direct participation in taxation with the accompanying assessments and foreclosures and penumbria flowing from it entangled the government with the church and with religion more than the alternative, an indirect and neutral tax exemption to all churches. and therefore constitutionalized the no entanglement principle in order to balance the two clauses in the First Amendment that relate to religion. Yet, in spite of that wealth of constitutional law, the media would use its self-serving wedge of the public's right to know to violate the most sacred rights of religion in the First Amendment. They think the public has a right to know the sex life of every politician. Their unhealthy, self-serving interest, perverted so often in all subjects, is what they are interested in. And it is the lowest of the low to use a high-sounding constitutional principle and hide behind it to serve your own purposes. The soldiers have a right to life and a future pursuit of happiness. Now, the Army brought its big guns out today, and they did real well. I was able to notice, though none of the other analysts seemed to pick up on it, the way in which both Powell and Cheney look like a Cheshire cat with their smiles and attitude. They know a lot that we don't know. And you could tell by their appearance, which conveyed some confidence for a change, we've been knocking the snot out of Saddam. 62 airfields, and they're flying out of four of them. Every time they engage us, they go down. Our leadership and the Pentagon moving freely. They're hunkering down, that phrase was used so often, in a bunker. I mean, they're already crazy. Add stir crazy in a few months. And still trying to make some kind of folk hero out of Saddam. You want to know how to figure Saddam out? Arrange your meeting with a gang leader over here in East Los Angeles. And you can always measure pride and arrogance in direct relationship to ignorance. There has never been an insecure person that's a moron on the face of this earth. I still carry in my mind's eye a story I've told only once in these 15 years. The town idiot up in Orville. Everybody knew him as the town idiot. And I'm driving out south out of Orville. I think it's Myers Street. Almost forgotten the streets of the town. Big town, had 8,000 people in it. And this town idiot was jaywalking across the road. Crosswalks 50 yards either direction. He picked in his moronic imbecility. He accidentally picked about midway between two sets of crosswalks, 50 yards either direction. And I skidded to a stop in my little green Chevy. And he looks up, not only idiot people do. I'll put a story within a story. We were driving in Santa Barbara one night with horse trainers and some other. Had a bunch of idiots in one of those rubber-tired tour cable cars and some drunken college students. And we went by, and one of them leaned out the window and said, "Hey, you in the Rolls Royce!" And he was so drunk, he couldn't think of anything to say, so he said, "Bleep you!" He didn't say bleep. Well, he probably should have been punched sober, but you could consider the source. He did it out of idiocy. This town idiot did it out of real, genuine hate and anger. You could just see the rage all over his idiotic, slack-jawed face. I mean, you look like a cross between a waterhead and a gorilla. And as he looked, you could just see the rage as he gave me the finger. I still remember sitting in that car wanting to kill. I really wanted to kill. What could you do about it? You could pound him. You could commit him. You could send him to Devil's Island if it still existed. And to his dying day, he would think, I was wrong. Because I was on the road he wanted to cross. That's the way they think. In direct ratio with stupidity, pride goes up. A mentality, I'm not talking about IQ or things of that nature as much as I am a mentality that borders on the savage, the uncivilized, close to the animal state. It's like a dog that marks his turf. And the biggest thing in life is defending it. I wish the news media had quit making Saddam complicated. You can only analyze this war from Saddam's frame of reference if you remember guerrilla warfare. He carries the illusion that he's going to lead an Arab rebellion worldwide. He cares nothing for his troops. He doesn't care if a million of them die and bleed to death while he sits in his bunker. He just wants to prove that he can come up against the United States, Macho Man, and survive. Well, it ain't gonna work. I mean, you know, the local gang leader might hold his own pretty good in a fist fight with the milkman. He'll probably act the same way if Mike Tyson walks down the curb, but the outcome will be different. Those are the hard, cold facts. And leaking out of the press conference today was an interesting phrase. When the ground war engages, if it's necessary, which they're saying also, it will be demonstrated, they said, that we have as much superiority in those ground war weapons as we do on the air. Who cares if he's underground? Just fill in the holes. You know, what America seems to have lost in listening to these talking heads every night. And you can tell the depth of their brain power if you just go to the side of the TV. It brings you some sanity. Get up from your chair, go to the side of the TV, and look at it. It really is a machine. Now, unlike them, I'm the same way with me. I'm just a box in there. Unlike them, you got a chance to come and see me for real. You never see these newscasters there. Sit there behind their idiot cards with their talking heads. Analyzing. What America needs is a real good old-fashioned case of hate. I really want the news to go out into Baghdad that I'm a pastor who hates him. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. God never hates anybody. Fool. Read Romans. Jacob I loved. Esau I hate. That's before he was born. Very godly to hate what God hates. And this arrogant distributor of terror with his turf that he has terrorized called Iraq. Just a self-glorified motorcycle gang in the days when motorcycle gangs were at their worst. This sadistic monster driven with a thirst to satiate his own ego. Terrorizing others, who's playing his mind games with terrorist pipe bombs that sail into populated areas and beat on pilots with a savagery that can't even rise to the level of the evil, barbaric Roman Empire ruled by Claudius and the Roman Senate, who could be inspired by the heroism of Caradoc called Caractacus, who had held them at bay as they sought him all through England. But he is so respected for his own courage that he receives decent treatment even from the Romans, that can let his goons beat on these prisoners of war and parade them on television. What America needs is a good old-fashioned dose of hatred until this evil is annihilated. Another thing I liked was the hint in the news conference today that if he uses unconventional weapons, we have a capacity to respond. That's as close as they've said to the possibility we might nuke them. And the doomsayers are going to have the climate of the earth destroyed. Well, my Bible doesn't say anywhere that the earth's going to be destroyed with smoke. So relax on that one too, folks. It does say the elements will melt with fervent heat, but it doesn't say we'll have another ice age. We're not going to freeze to death either. So cheer up, folks, and in the name of Jesus, hate Saddam and his fawning goons. Imagine how they feel down in their hole. I mean, when you really analyze that crew, would you like to spend 7 or 8 months, 4 stories down, in a hole in the ground with them? They're such status they'll be killing each other before it's over, and the news suggests they've killed 7 of them in the last few days on some coup attempt. Whether true or not, it's typical. So we're winning this war. And our guys are ready, and they deserve our support. And the news media makes me want to vomit. They use such illustrations as the first war ever, that they can't be out there on the front lines. Well, it's the first war ever where modern technology enables the news media to be the spotters for the enemy, who don't need any people behind enemy lines or any sophisticated equipment to determine the success of their shots. Just fire the missiles and turn on CNN. And does it take a lot of brains to figure out why Saddam has allowed only one newsman to stay in Baghdad? He will not even allow the border crossing now, because the truth's been leaking out the last day and a half. Refugees telling us the truth about what's happening in Iraq, which contrasts with his false propaganda. So now he's closed the border. Only one outlet of news tonight from inside Iraq. His tapes of propaganda that he smuggles out and one CNN newsman. Figure it out for yourself. And he's the mouthpiece to argue with our sophisticated ability to take pictures of targets that we have destroyed, the only factory or plant in all of Iraq that can provide powdered milk for babies under a certain year. Oh, I'm sure they still got nursing mothers, but that's another subject. It's just a lie. It's just an absolute lie. And I'm sure that their workers, with the kind of nationalism and hatred of things American and English, I'm sure that their workers just happen to have uniforms that read baby milk factory or whatever it says in English, not in Arabic. It's hard for a news media to convince me that the public needs to know the truth when they're so careless in peddling what they know beyond question or lies, and serve the enemy's purpose so well. Smells like treason to me, and I don't intend to change the opinion until I see something I haven't seen yet. So you that feel the same way and are glad somebody's catharting for you, get on the telephone while I relax myself with my little instrument here. On the telephone. You know, this is First Fruits Month. To you regulars, we've been spending a lot of time trying to counterbalance the garbage of all-day media distortion. But this is First Fruits Month. And we are seeking to have Secret Five be victorious by February 1st. Here's an interesting letter. January 14th, 1991, to Dr. Gene Scott. Good morning, Dr. Scott. This is my first letter to you. It has to do with your teachings on Exodus 23, specifically the conditional blessings associated with the offering of the first fruits. I like that. An angel on staff for a week's pay sounds like too good a deal to turn down, so here is my first week's pay for 1991. Use it to the furtherance of the Lord's work, and I'd appreciate being placed on the mailing list to receive the Truth magazine and copy of materials available from Dolores Press. Thanks in advance. May the Lord bless you in his name. And he signs his name. That is a pretty good deal, you know. An angel to go before you on staff for a year, for a week's pay. That's the best deal you'll make the whole year, I'll tell you that. When Larry King lived today, he had what the gentleman who was recognized as the world's greatest negotiator. He believes you can negotiate anything. He put to rest, quoting impressive authority, those who say the choice is negotiation or war, by pointing out that war is negotiating. And when asked directly if there was any negotiation possible right now, he said no. Ultimately, yes. If what is meant by the question is verbal negotiating and stopping the war. Because there is negotiating going on that is on track, namely war, which is designed to make the other side at some point want to negotiate. And I thought Bush made a good point. The war started with Iran in August. We're reacting to it now. They have the greatest ability, those who care nothing for truth, as I taught on Sunday, but only want to use all techniques of verbal and visual communication to win their point of view. To them, negotiating is always like that classic story that I've told probably a dozen times of the two brothers who were given an opportunity to choose a cat. And there were two choices, an ugly, scroungy alley cat and a beautiful Siamese. And one brother grabbed the beautiful Siamese cat and says, "Now you choose." That was his way of negotiating. You knock him loose from the cat as the responsive negotiation. Then the opportunity for real choosing occurs. Otherwise, there's no negotiating at all. A simple submission by one side and taking by the other side. There is negotiation going on. And the chips on the table are the lives of our American and allied men and women. About whom this nation does care. And the lives of Iraqis about whom their government cares not a whit. They're just expendable cannon fodder to buy time for the devious madman hiding out in his bunker. I'll guarantee you he hasn't visited the troops in Kuwait since the war started. I may get into some heavy stuff tonight as I go back to Reinhold Niebuhr to straighten out some Christian mulligan heads in their thinking. If you carry the logic of the peaceniks and the street yellows who are singing peace at any cost to its full extension, why don't we have the police force lay down their arms and love the gangs? Same logic. What we have is a larger spectrum gang leader who has seized his turf completely, and everyone's been afraid to walk through it except under his colors. And just as gangs are spreading out in their murderous activities, so has he tried to do. You follow their logic to its full extension, you empty the prisons. Just love those that are in it. Tell your sister that he raped, that he's coming out of prison and she should love him, particularly if he hacked one of her arms off. You carry their logic to its full extension. We welcome the drug lords and we eliminate all national police activities designed to keep organized crime in check. Because what you have in Saddam Hussein is an organized mobster with a country all his own. Even to the fact that in an Arab country where gambling is frowned upon, he recognized the revenue-producing opportunities of horse racing and personally controls the franchises and funds himself accordingly. What you have is an evil godfather in the criminal frame who has a country all his own, taking advantage of international law to serve his purposes, as criminals take advantage of the constitutional protections that we all cherish to serve their purposes. And the world's too big for us to police. I'm proud of the fact that we're big enough to police it. Somebody's got to. Who would you nominate? The Soviets? Who would you nominate? Saddam? He will police it if he isn't policed. Instead of being shocked at what resilience he does have and the magnitude of his war machine, that seems to scare the media to death, but doesn't frighten our warriors that much, and so far has not achieved any victories, even the small skirmishes on the border. Look who's taken prisoners. In every ground meeting to date, we got prisoners and they didn't. Of course, that's probably the only mistake we're making. We shouldn't take any. That's a personal opinion. But once they're taken, at least be humane. I have an idea for it's over. We're going to have one of the biggest prison camps the world ever saw. They only understand force. They only understand power. It's the only tool that will keep them in check. And to feel sorry for the people of Kuwait is legitimate. But it should be put in the context of feeling sorry for a neighborhood that lives in terror when that neighborhood is ruled by gangs. Deliver the neighborhood, but you won't do it with love. And if you think they would stay in their area if there was no force available to at least contain, you're crazier than a loon. On a small scale, society's always had to deal with these lawless territories. Movies are made as the frontier moved westward of the pockets of lawless territory that provided sanctuary to gangs who would venture forth to wreak their havoc and then return to their sanctuary. The long tradition of Western movies, from the Texas Rangers to John Wayne, or the parts that he played, portray that constant extension of civilization and law into lawless areas. We now have a world where what happens in Saudi Arabia, you hear the air raid siren and we're looking at it while the missile is sailing in. The plea of the journalist to be in the middle of things is far different than a newspaper writer or a box camera photographer landing on the beaches at Normandy. You knew which side he was on when he landed on the beach, and he knew which of the two camps were shooting at him. But now, with worldwide satellite and audio connections, the media gets carried away and actually believes it's 40 or 23,000 miles up there looking down on everything. They have some kind of exaggerated identity with the satellite. They feel godlike. And a world is now, instead of a territory in Oklahoma, in the early days of the frontier, where lawlessness ran rampant and power and force by uncouth and unprincipled men ruled, and civilized people ventured therein with fear and trembling. We now have sections of large cities controlled by lawless, unprincipled, egomaniac, ruled by force, scabs on society, and you venture there at your own risk. Now, let us go out to the satellite for a moment and view a constricted world where Iraq is even closer to us because the cameras are trained on it than a gang turf in the Bronx to a New Yorker living on Park Avenue, or a gang turf in one of the areas of Los Angeles to those of us sitting here tonight. And everybody's talking about, what are we going to do if Saddam gets nuclear capacity? Well, how about a ballistic missile that can reach the populated areas of Europe? Or the populated areas of the United States? He'll get one of those faster than getting nuclear power at the rate he was going. And the military might that this madman on the edge of the desert has been able to accumulate from the wealth of oil that he controlled. Had he gotten the wealth of Kuwait, not even counting the excursion, had he not been stopped, he would have made into Bahrain and Saudi Arabia. And the obvious evil willingness of those in Western nations without principles that have sold him chemical weapons and Mirage jets and other war-making materials that he now demonstrates. We were certainly less than a decade from this madman having the power to terrorize the whole world. And who is fool enough to think that sanctions, if they had lasted for 5 years, would have resulted in him doing away with his armament? All it would have done would have prolonged the madman in power to come back another day. This is a nest of wild men who would hold the world captive with its terrorist actions if it were not stopped. And I'm telling you, the Bible says a madman from that area, full of the devil, will hold the world captive before history bows down not to the love of Jesus, but to the power of Jesus. Are you going to tell me that he's got love coming out of his mouth? My Bible says a sword that brings blood to the bridles of the horses in the plain of Megiddo. Now, this prototype of Antichrist can be allowed to rise right now, or he can be driven back and destroyed in his power, and Antichrist will be put off for a generation. And that's what's happening in the Middle East right now. There are people to hate . I know as much Bible as anybody listening to me and quote a great deal more of it in original language than most of those listening to me, and probably more than all that are listening to me. God loves, but he can also hate. And God hates Saddam, so do I. He's already been turned over to a strong delusion. Believing a lie is going to be damned. And I'm not praying for the salvation of his soul. He's already past that mark. I want to rejoice while his soul fries. In the name of Jesus. A very small minority of vain, self-serving, overpaid,
mutually self-protective body of men and women, a very small minority, has ruled America for the last 3 or 4 decades. Only now, for the first time, are they discovering what a true minority they are. And I'm talking about the news media. They have ruthlessly destroyed every expression of power and leadership in this nation except themselves. They have made it impossible for true leadership to rise to the fore in most arenas of social activity in this land. George Washington could not have been elected president if the media as it now exists was around in that day. The fact that he made Martha unhappy with his attempts to literally be the father of our country would have disqualified him. Thomas Jefferson's dalliances with one of his servant maids would have disqualified him. Even as recent as the Kennedys, there would have been no face down of Khrushchev. If the media had the power then, it now has. Until the current day, when the current crisis has been combined with God bringing onto the scene leadership that looks like it's going to carry out and hang tough to the complete carrying out of the purposes of this war, the media has ruled supreme. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And the media had seized absolute power, had become the fourth branch of government with more power than the other three. And it just may be because of the plan that God has for America and his master design of history, that God has said enough and has allowed this crisis at this hour to not only get rid of Saddam, but put the media back in balance with somewhat less of the absolute power that it has seized for itself. I said for many, many months in the uncomfortable position of defending the TV evangelists that I had exposed and talked about long before the media did, that the real motive behind the attack is that the religious voices on TV represented the only source of mind power that competed with the nightly news. It was the only source of mind power that could gain allegiance from wide bodies through television, wide bodies of people within our populace, where a voice would be listened to, that those who listened to that voice believed in more than they did the nightly news. And that's what the nightly news hated. They had to eliminate those idea power centers that competed with their mind control. And they have gotten so giddy in their self-proclaimed and self-anointed Messiah complex as the deliverer of the American people that they don't know what to do when a force greater than them has said, this is as far as you can go, and you're not going to go any further. And they have turned like savages. Tonight I listened to a newsman from Amman, Jordan. Saying that he had the best perspective because that was the only country he could report from that was talking to both sides. As if Saddam has a side. Saddam doesn't have a side. The Palestinians have a side. The PLO doesn't have a side. In civilized nations, those who use terrorism as a methodology are outlaws. They live outside the law. And lawful, civilized society cannot tolerate negotiation or coexistence with outlaws. There is no side. There was no side for communism. Look around you in today's world and see its failure. And tell me there was a side for communism. There is no side for terrorism. Terrorists have stepped outside the pale and exempted themselves from the right to engage in reasonable discussion until they abandon totally terrorism as a weapon. The whole world has stood and screamed inside itself, what do we do with terrorists? And the problem has been you can't identify the head. Well, the head's been identified. You say, well, there were other heads. Well, at least get the one in focus out of the way. And some of you have seen me shoot a shotgun. My granddad taught me a long time ago. When a covey takes off, you won't hit anything if you shoot at the covey. You pick one and stay on it. Then pick another one. There's a covey of terrorists in the world. We got one in our sights. It is criminal to leave Iraq in the hands of a madman. He He's consistently committed war crimes. And the hypocrites who march in the street have tried to tell all of us, and I'm responsive to that call, that our heart must look to the world. We've stood and applauded as the song crossed the nation, "We Are the World." And those same people, so many of them, are now saying, having told us to bear the burden of the world, now we can't add to that burden the policing of a vital part of the world to remove a megalomaniac national gang leader who's claimed the turf. If we're to have compassion on the world with its needs, we must equally be ready to turn courage loose on the world to remove its evils. Isolationism is at least consistent. It's stupid, but it's consistent. Isolationism says, we don't care about the world. We build high fences and live for me and mine, and turn a deaf ear, or better yet, another part of our anatomy, ostrich style, to the world. I can't stand hypocrisy. I can't stand people who scream at me that I must love the world and their needs and not love the world enough to remove a bully that is inflicting pain beyond concept. I don't know how many of you have seen the picture of Saddam Hussein calmly striding to the platform and reading off a list of some 20-plus former associates and compatriots that he had decided to brand as disloyal. And as they led him from the room to what he knew was a pre-planned first step for execution, he calmly takes his cigar and lights it as his former comrades in revolution are led out to torturing and death. This evil, epitome with national power of a gang leader who somehow feeds his self-indulged macho image by performing executions with his own pistol. How many sat revolted in Vietnam War days as they played on the news, that wild-eyed maniac in the streets of a Vietnamese city, as on the news you watched him put his pistol to the head of a kneeling victim of execution to come, with hands behind his back, and we saw him blow the side of his head out with a pistol on TV. The media is almost painting Saddam Hussein as a folk hero. When they're done, he will be some mysterious Robin Hood type character that strikes dramatically, hurling his flying pipe bombs into targets 35 by 30 miles square. He's going to be turned into some underdog that we can't catch his Scud missiles. Well, hell, I could hide a flatbed truck myself. All you gotta do is drive it under a bridge. Drive it into a warehouse. The Scud missiles have been made important by the news. We now know the truth about the one that got through. It was the Israeli trainees who fired last night, not the American crew, that resulted in the one missile getting through. The American crew with the Patriots have batted 1,000. Not a single missile has gotten through yet. And the media, with its typical ability to warp things, has made more noise about a loser than I have ever heard in my entire life. The Scuds have been turned into some romantic instrument of terrorism. We don't know how to stop the Scuds. We've stopped every damn one of them. Except for one, by an untrained crew that tried to see if they could do it last night. Today, the American crew, when the missile came toward Haifa, I think 6 of them were shot today in Haifa and Saudi Arabia combined, and all of them were shot down. That the media would make him some kind of romantic folk hero, because he's had all these years to prepare for this. He's going to lose, but he should be described as the worm he is that's going to be smashed and get on telephone. The media continues to make a folk hero out of Saddam Hussein, going on how clever and how tough he is. He ain't clever and tough, he's a coward, hunkering in a bunker. The bunker hunker. He cares so much about baby powder. Why doesn't he manufacture some down in his bunker? It ain't really that hard to manufacture. Put some of the Iraqi women and babies in the bunker. They could probably use a swimming pool, too. Saunas and the steam baths. You know, Reinhold Niebuhr was one of those who would have fit in very nice with the clerical collar crowd and the ecclesiastical tone, stained glass window mouthed preachers, singing peace at any cost, and love Saddam into a sweet potato pie. He preached just such a message of love and liberalism at his graduation degree. He was picked as the speaker at his graduation from theological school. He took a little church in the suburbs of Detroit with about 100 members, watched it grow to over 1,000, which in those days without television was quite a church in that metropolitan area, and saw a man enslaved and treated as a machine in the Industrial Revolution, watched the most educated nation in the world, led by a demon-possessed tyrant, bring the world to the brink of destruction, Adolf Hitler. And it took him back to God's Word. And he, along with Karl Barth and Emil Brunner and Paul Tillich, led the way to the neo-orthodoxy that shattered to those who take the trouble to pay attention the illusions of the liberals. And they went back to God's Word, why it's called neo-orthodoxy, and discovered that the problem of mankind was not ignorance, and it wasn't poverty, or any of the things that the milquetoast crowd liked to point to. The problem was sin. Some bent within man to put himself first. To borrow some of his phraseology, the force of human sin, the persistent tendency to regard ourselves the center of the universe. The more ignorant you are, the more the capacity to believe that. But he takes on those who condemn only one kind of power, the use of force. Because he, being German in heritage, recognized that it was the churchmen with their illusions that failed to stop Hitler. It was the idealism of the liberals that failed to recognize that the choice that faced them was not war or democratic idealism, where love and reasoned discourse took place. The choice was tyranny with 5 million of one group gassed. It was tyranny by an alligator sadist called a man who would gobble up the world, or war. The ideal choice was not available. You either violated the ideals of love by submitting to tyranny, being unwilling to resist it through the use of force, or you use force tragically and with a broken heart to resist the force of evil, that new opportunity for good might be available. And he conceived the theological concept of the tragic choice. The difference between an evil choice and a tragic choice is the one who makes a tragic choice knows what evil is, doesn't call black white, but will make the temporary tragic choice knowing the wrong that is entailed in it to defeat a greater wrong and to avoid the greater wrong of submitting to this greater wrong. An evil person adopts force, deifies it, calls black white, and uses it as a bully and a terrorist, and a sadist, and a torturer, to serve his selfish desire of aggrandizement and self-deification. A good and conscientious person, knowing that it's violating love, painfully, makes the tragic choice to adopt the lesser of the two evils, to use force to stop tyranny rather than avoid force and submit to tyranny. Because with tyranny removed, you still have a choice not to use force. You still have a choice for force to cease. But if you submit to tyranny, force rules. You use force to remove tyranny, in that tragic choice, you know that force is a tragic choice of the lesser of the evils. To defeat a force, that the opportunity of non-force confrontation can be preserved. But to those that were weak-minded in regard to power and who love to point to those that have opportunities of non-force, I want to tell you something. Neither Gandhi nor Martin Luther King could have practiced their non-violent method had they been in Iraq. That method only works when you're in a society of law that has been obtained by predecessors who put lawlessness down. Even though those who live in that society of law, because power corrupts and sin rules and self-centeredness is the norm, will abuse their position, the society of law that they have adopted and may be abusing provides the opportunity for the nonviolent resistor. Had he taken that method to China rather than a part or a portion of China that was not under colonial rule, or any other place that was not under colonial rule, where law at least was respected by the general society at large and over the long haul ruled, he wouldn't have been able to practice it. He'd have been an early martyr. A society that practices murder as its method of ruling will rule, will eliminate the nonviolent protester in a hurry. There's a tendency to exaggerate force as the only abuse of power. Though reason, Reinhold Niebuhr said in his landmark Heartland study, The Nature and Destiny of Man, is commonly supposed to be transcendent rather than partial. Like a satellite, it stands above everything in theory. It is hardly necessary at this point to prove that reason may be the instrument of the ego in advancing its claims against another. When it is so used, it is a power which supports the claims of one life against another. The shrewd do take advantage of the simple. A rational solution of a conflict may be a very unjust one if the more robust has overpowered the weaker intellect. But there are other spiritual faculties which may serve the same purpose. One man may keep another enslaved purely by soul force, which is what Gandhi identified. It was but a method. I admire him. I thought it was a step forward in a society of law, where law prevails, the opportunity is provided for soul force to reveal itself, and consciences, men and women of conscience who live under law, to have their conscience activated. But that's a method of power. It is used by some men to further selfish ends. That's why a lot of people don't read Niebuhr. He's pretty heavy. Such soul force may consist of spiritual vitalities of various kinds, mental and emotional energy. the possession or the pretension of virtue, the prestige of an heroic life or of a gentle birth. Pure physical force is always a last resort in individual relations. It is determinative in these relations only on primitive levels. All civilized relations are governed more by spiritual than by physical facets of power. It is significant that they are not, for that reason, naturally more just. We are dealing not with a civilized people. Civilized people don't do what Iraq has done in the rape of Kuwait. And you notice, it became the 19th province of Iraq. Until we came against him, his great love for the Palestinians wasn't heard. Why didn't he offer once he moved in? Why didn't he just overthrow the ruling family and offer it to the Palestinians? You notice the Palestinians are fleeing to Jordan. They aren't fleeing from Jordan to Iraq. 300,000 of them are in Jordan. Those trucks loaded with bags and goats can go the other direction. Why aren't they enlisting in the Iraqi army? Well, you've got plenty of space. Won't they offer to drive Scuds? Missile trucks. I saw Koppel last night ask a couple of them, why is it in all the times we have talked as he treated them with gentleness and dignity he will never give one of our leaders? It's always America. Neither you nor Iraq never have done anything wrong. And he let them get away with avoiding answering the question. They use rhetoric. The very same people who sit on the tops of buildings and cheer as these pipe bombs called Scuds, good name for them, come flying in to residential sections of Tel Aviv, including Arabs living in the area, will then scream and holler about innocent civilians being killed in Iraq. These same Palestinians being featured every night on television, screaming about the killing of innocent citizens in Iraq, and you know if there was a lot of it happening, Saddam would have it on TV. He has to manufacture a case of a so-called milk factory, baby food factory. Haven't said a word about the citizens slaughtered in Kuwait. Rhetoric. I'll be playing at the close of this lifetime again the message from last Sunday. I want you to listen closely to the distinction between logic and rhetoric. And I'm saying again what I said Sunday. The media knows the difference. Yet they give equal time to these propaganda lies that they know to be lies while they tear into the side that is civilized, seeking to preserve civilization, painfully making the tragic choice to use force against a man who has an ambition to rule the world through terror and force. There is a point where decent men choose up sides. And every day that the media waits to choose up sides proves what we've all known about them. They lack decency. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. And thank God, out of this event, if we hold firm, the minority that thought they were capable of controlling the majority with ease are finding that America doesn't like the way they are handling this war. This is not Vietnam. There has been a declaration of war. Every constitutional scholar will tell you that war represents a threat to the nation, a compelling state interest that forces their claims of free press to be restrained for the duration.